Good morning, everyone. If we can all please get a seat, I'm going to call this meeting to order. Please call the roll.
Aguirre. Arambia.
Present.
Arapastathis. Kate.
Here.
Diaz.
Present.
Faulkner. Gomez.
Present.
Hall.
Here.
McClellan.
Here.
Mullen.
Here.
Rios.
Here.
Roberts. Salas.
Here.
Sankey.
Here.
Ward.
Here.
Thank you. And I just want to welcome, we have some new faces joining us this morning. Thank you for being here. It's going to be a fruitful discussion. As you can see, we have a big audience today, so welcome. We're going to move forward with the approval of the minutes. If I can please get a motion for approving the minutes of November 8th. Thank you. Can I have a, okay, thank you, Mr. Diaz. I think it was the motion, I heard it from Mr. Arambula, second by Mr. Diaz. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Moves unanimously. We have some requests to speak to the board. We're going to start with Patrick Liva. Following will be Edna Nerio. You can please go to the podium. The time. 2 minutes. You will
morning.
Have 2 minutes.
My name is Patrick Liva, and Edna and Mickey have given me their 2 minutes as well.
Okay.
My first concern is the other day when it rained, Alpha Project had a tent at Father Joe's. It flooded, 20 porta potties overflowed. When I called MTS to ask if they did any kind of health protection to prevent the spread of hepatitis, I was hung up on. I recorded it, I live streamed it to show you people that I'm tired of the lies. We deserve fair answers. We don't deserve our health to be put in danger because of stuff that you're not doing. I just wanted a straight answer. Did you wash the buses down? And I was hung up on. When we had our hepatitis outbreak last time, I called Wayne Terry, the COO. He said, let me know what you see. People started wiping the benches down. My concern today is the homeless are still on the benches. Feces, hepatitis lives outside of the body for 5 days, and it doesn't seem like you guys care about the public. Nothing is being wiped down. And then for the two people that gave me their time, Compass passes for senior citizens is overpriced. They can't afford it, and why do people from Mexico get discounts? The other issue is the cleanliness. This woman drives on the bus. Homeless are on there with mattresses. You guys are gonna spread hepatitis if you don't make your priority the public. I have everyone recorded because I'm tired of being lied to by politicians. I've called Chris Ward's office at night. I say this call may or may not be recorded for quality assurance purposes. I don't get phone calls back. I went down there to show a videotape of a guy getting beat up at the trolley stop. His assistant, Brian Elliott, hid in the back office and eventually came out. Why are you guys so afraid of the truth and helping the public rather than making money? You suffer from the spiritual malady of greed, which falls under addiction, and it's easily diagnosable. We don't deserve this. The homeless epidemic is affecting everyone. My Facebook, Patrick Liva, I have videotaped everything from the mayor accepting campaign contributions at the duty-free and then piling up at Park and Market and no one doing anything about it. Our businesses that pay taxes are going out of business because you people, not so much here, the mayor's not here, are turning your back on the public's needs. I don't mean to rant. I've been trying to call you people, but you don't return phone calls, Chris. I don't get it. What else? The tent? I ran into a guy in the elevator. He said, oh yeah, we washed it down, the buses, so the hepatitis wasn't spread. Why can't you just tell people that on the phone instead of hanging up on their ear? I have it, I live streamed it on Facebook so you can see your own behavior. If it's our job to make you accountable, and that's what I'm doing. People are dying, and hepatitis will be spread again if you don't watch what you're doing. We have a right to be heard. That's why I set my alarm for 6 o'clock. I don't normally get up this early. Georgette, congratulations on your position as the head of the city council. You're the only office that has the dignity to call me back. Everyone else hangs up and hides. Sorry. Everyone else hangs up and hides. Georgette Gomez, you carry yourself with character and dignity, and I respect you for that. But the rest of you that just want to hide in your office and not answer phone calls? we deserve the same respect. You guys are getting paid a lot of money. You just sold a lot of properties, and you're not going to deal with the issues. You're going to become a conglomerate and just ignore the public. People don't deserve to be treated this way so you can make your filthy rich retirements. I'm a retired veteran. I'm disabled. Every time I step out front, I put my life in danger because of the feces on the walls. Our mayor, Kevin Faulkner, accepts campaign contributions from the duty-free station in San Ysidro. They line up at Park and Market. Downtown Partnership and MTS will not enforce it. They turn their back. I tape record everyone in the line of fire. It's okay for the mayor to make money off something that's coming in from another country? I don't get the rationale. I really don't. There was more, and I'm just nervous, so.
Okay.
How much time do I have?
You have, who was the third person that gave you the time?
Mickey and Edna.
Mickey. Okay. Two more minutes.
We deserve a fair shake in this. I'm glad you sold your properties. I'm glad you made money. But rather than spending it somewhere else, can you at least take care of the properties that are here? When you power wash the sidewalks, can you go all the way to the buildings? The homeless and your debris lands on our property. And I don't want hepatitis. I don't have an immune system, and I could die because of your spiritual malady of greed. I think that's enough, but thank you for listening. I'm coming from a frustrated place, because when people like Chris Ward hide in his office when he's getting a paycheck, I get a paycheck too. I'm a disabled veteran. We want to see some professionalism. The guy in the elevator said, oh yeah, we washed down the buses. Stop exposing us to dangerous stuff so you can make money. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. So just as a form of respect to the time, I'm going to ask the audience to please not clap, and also to turn off your phones. Really appreciate it. Valerie Hightower, following Jack Shue.
Okay, I've been asking for benches to be put back. You know, you guys think that the sectional benches are stopping people from sleeping out? Also, city, you know, you need to generate an animal bus pass. The service dogs wear a vest, say, don't touch me because I'm working. Here's another thing. When are you going to open up the restrooms that are now locked and shut down for us to use? They don't make no sense. They're there, open them. Another thing, who's cleaning the bus stops and the bus benches? You know? And can we have the benches put back at City College? You need to put more than one bus bench out. This morning on my way down here on the number 4, traffic was blocked up 3 blocks long. That one bus bench, and you got, you know, the special needs kids that need to sit down. You got the elderly that need to sit down. You guys need to put back the benches in the communities. And also, may God bless y'all decisions, because when y'all behind them closed doors talking and laughing, the Holy Spirit is right there.
So good morning, board members. My name is Jack Shue, 8040 Wethley Street in La Mesa. And for those of you who know me, you know I'm a strong transit advocate. And for the comments I'm about to make this morning, please don't take this as I'm not appreciative of all your work in trying to build a quality transit system in San Diego. My comments are in regards to the bond measure that's being considered that you had an ad hoc committee to work on and maybe do some other work on how to proceed with a bond measure. So I have some questions with regards to this measure. One is, will there be any kind of review to look at this bond measure, the proposed bond measure, as whether or not it can achieve the goals of like other cities in our country and elsewhere in the world that have the 50% transit bike walk mode share that we're trying to reach? And to do that kind of review with really well-known transit experts. Another question would be, hey, does this bond measure and the projects within it, if it even names projects, will it considers the other work that already has been done with regards to transportation development here in San Diego, the Urban Area Transit Study, Project Lindbergh, the mobility plan for downtown, and so forth. A third question. We have a lot of serious goals and targets to meet here in our region with regards to greenhouse gas reduction, reducing pollution, and improving communities, both legislative and certainly a lot from the environmental community and communities of concern. Does this measure improve any of those? Will it reach those targets, and when and how? Another fourth question is, let me just skip to my last question, which is, I'll go back to my fourth question. Is this measure going to supplant or supplement the funds we have available for transportation development? And that's a complicated question, and I'll go into that later. The last issue is, a tax measure like this.
And one last sentence, Mr. Hsu, your time is up.
All right, well, there's some serious questions. Are we going to make the poor poorer through this measure? And that's my serious question. Economic justice, and we need to consider that. This is the last kind of tax measure we
should
put forward.
Thank you, Mr. Hsu. Clyde Richards.
Thank you. I was almost getting comfortable. Thank you, Chair Gomez, members of the board. My name is Clive Richard, and as I'm very fond of telling people, I live in the 9th Council District of the City of San Diego and the 2nd Supervisory District of the County of San Diego. The reason I wanted to speak to you this morning is to talk to you about two things. One is we really do need to improve our network. Yes, we have buses that intersect, routes that intersect, but the idea of arriving at a stop and watching a bus leave, that's your connection, and yes, it's only 15 minutes, but 15 minutes can make a difference. 15 minutes would mean that I would arrive here after the meeting has started and before and after you've taken public comment, because the bus that I ride goes by my neighborhood, arrives at San Diego State at the same time as the trolley that arrives here on the Bayside leaves from San Diego State. That's not really a network. It's just a simple set of connections, and there is a difference. I was always proud of telling people that we were moving toward a rapid network, and that was what the COA was all about, and that is what I think TAP was supposed to be all about. Top, I believe it's called. These are the ideas, but we really do need to improve them. I see my time is probably up, and I'll just say thank you.
Thank you for that. We're going to move forward with the consent item. We do have a speaker on item 19, not wishing to pull the item, but just address the board. So, Ms. Turner.
Hi, everyone. I'm the assistant director with the ARCA San Diego's Employment Services. And for many years, we've had a community relationship with you guys. And you guys have been able to provide 12 employment opportunities with individuals with disabilities. And today, we're here to renew that contract. And we just really want to say that it's such a great relationship that we have with you guys. I mean, people with disabilities, there's lots of people, but people with disabilities are really challenged, and to include them into an environment and provide them an opportunity that me and you get every day to go to work, to be an active member of the society, to earn a paycheck and be able to pay their bills, we're truly grateful. Robert right here, he works down at the MTS downtown location. But we have two clients out of the 12 that have been with the agency and worked for you guys for 14 years. I looked it up just a few minutes ago. Robert has been working for about two. But we just want to say thank you so much for this opportunity, and we do appreciate everything that you have done. Do you want to say anything, Robert? You okay?
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. We do appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you for that. Is there a request from the board to pull any of the items of the consent? Thank you, Mr. Ward. Thank you, Mr. Sankey. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Moves unanimously. Thank you. We're now going to take a break and go into closed session. And we'll be back. Thank you all. We're going to proceed with the board's agenda. We do have a closed session report. General Counsel, please.
Yes, on item number 24A, closed session conference with real property negotiators and legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation. The board received a report and gave instructions to staff and counsel. On item number 24B, closed session conference with labor negotiators, the board approved a collective bargaining agreement with the ATU Local 1309 on a vote of 12 saying aye and 3 members absent. On item number 24C, the board received a report regarding conference with labor negotiators and gave instructions to staff.
Thank you. We're going to proceed with discussion item 30, MTS Transit Service Fixed Route and Bus Rapid Transit. I'm going to turn it over to Paul.
Just a very quick intro. Staff is ready to give a presentation. Transdev is our contractor in South Bay and East County. They operate about 50% of all our fixed route bus service. We signed a deal with, or I should say, we awarded a contract to them about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago. And it was done prior to all of the local and state ordinances and laws with respect to minimum wage. So they're in their contract, and minimum wage happens, and they find themselves unable to recruit. They went into labor negotiations with the Teamsters. They came out with a deal that they believe satisfies their ability to recruit and retain drivers. And the reality is those minimum wage impacts have risen those wages by over 20%. So we sat down with them, heard what their impacts were. We put together a kind of a forensics team in our finance department to go over all their documentation, all of their original bidding, all their labor contract, their wage rates, everything, their attrition rates, to figure out what would be an appropriate amount. And what you're going to hear today is the culmination of at least 2 months worth of back and forth with them in order to do that. So with that, I'll hand it over.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Chair Gomez and Board of Directors, we come this morning to talk about, as Paul said, a proposed contract revision to the Transdev service contract that we have. Just quick overview, Paul hit a lot of this. We have a contract with Transdev, and they operate all of our service in East County, South Bay. Some of that comes up through Central San Diego. It's about 50% of our fixed route service. They also operate the Rural Lifeline service and the Commuter Express service, the 280 and the 290. So they operate about 10 million annual miles of service, and they operate 332 of our buses. The bulk of the contract with Transdev is personnel, maintenance employees, as well as the drivers and field supervision to operate that service. Also, the contract includes the upcoming South Bay Rapid service, which begins at the end of January 2019. So that's it's an extra piece in this contract. The current contract, as Paul said, was awarded in early 2015. It has a base that runs from July 1st of 15 through June of 2021. It does include two additional 3-year option periods after June of 2021. The entire contract is based upon a rate per mile of service operated. So all of Transdev's costs, whether they are variable, fixed, personnel, all of those costs are built into that rate per mile. The base contract is large. It's a large contract. It's approximately $337 million for the six-year base term. As you also know, the minimum wage changes that occurred between the city of San Diego and then the state of California, and we've blended those changes into one table as they take place from the beginning of the legislation to going out forward. And you can see we've put a couple of pieces in there. The start of the contract, the minimum wage was $10 when that contract was awarded with Transdev. It's now, as we get towards January of 19, it'll be $12 an hour, and then it proceeds up from there. So those impacts have been significant on the Transdev contract. So after we awarded this contract and the minimum wage increases went into place, Transdev went into negotiations with the two major unions that all of their employees belong to. The driver's side, it's Teamsters and ATU, and on the mechanic side, it's Teamsters, and it's all the same local of Teamsters. So it's those two unions that they negotiate with. The important goals for that as the minimum wage increases, obviously, is to achieve compliance. There were a couple of entry-level servicer positions at minimum wage, but essentially it's keeping pace with the regional labor market and keeping pace with the increase of minimum wage and how that relates to their ability to retain, recruit, and keep employees. After Transdev negotiated those into their collective bargaining agreements, we've been discussing and negotiating with Transdev over the past several months the impact of those minimum wage increases and their cost and the cost of operating the service. We've been looking at the last 2.5 years of the base term, so beginning from January of 2019 and running through June of 2021. We've negotiated proposed revised rates that I'll show you in a minute, and those rate increases go towards the driver and mechanic wages. We've also at this time agreed that we wouldn't extend the option years beyond June of 2021. That can be revisited as we go through the base period, but at this point, we've decided not to automatically use those option years because the difference in minimum wage continues to increase in the costs. At the same time, while we were discussing the minimum wage impacts, we also looked at the BRT service, which begins in January, and there are two things that impact that. Obviously, the minimum wage impact impacts that BRT service as well, because it's mechanics and drivers and staff. But it also is impacted by when we put out the RFP for South Bay Rapid, that was back in 2014, and we had a projection from Sandag about the total miles of BRT, and that's been fine-tuned now, so it's about a 30% reduction in the amount of miles that the South Bay Rapid will run, and so that has had an effect on that rate as well. So we've been discussing both of those with Transdev, and so here is our proposed contract revision. There are, in the middle of the slide, you'll see the changes to the rate per mile. That's, again, how this contract is paid. But essentially, that is the impact of the minimum wage from January of 19 through the end of the base year, which is June of 2021. The total on the rate increase has an impact on MTS expenses of $8.5 million between January and June of 2021. It also has a $1 million impact on the BRT rate, but that's 100% funded by Transnet. So that's funded separately. That's a 7% increase on the contract rates over those remaining 2.5 years. And we put on the slide at the bottom just a couple of things to consider. As many of you know, we had to come to the board over a year ago on the security contract for the same reasons, the impact of minimum wage on recruiting and retention and ability to keep a labor force. And then just, again, the impact of minimum wage is significantly more than the impact that we've had to include in these rates. And so with that, we're here today to ask the board to recommend that to authorize the CEO to execute Amendment 1, which would increase the TransDev contract rates per mile, and that is about an $8.5 million impact spread out over the next 2.5 years of the MTS budget. There's no additional contract authority. We can do this within the original authority that was approved with this contract. And with that, we'll take questions.
Thank you, Bill. Are there any, we do not have any public requests on this item. Are there any comments or questions from the board? I see no questions or comments. I did hear a motion from Mr. Hall. Second by Mr. Sankey. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Moving on to item number 31, which is the account-based fare collection system. I'll take a second to get so I will turn it over to staff. That one.
Good morning. Today we're here to discuss the contract award for a new fare collection system. For many of you, this will, some of it will be ancient history because you've been working on this for a couple of years now. The need for the project, the software, it's an older program platform that is was procured in 2003. It's progressively become outdated, and it really lacks a lot of the modern functionality of new technology. It constantly needs upgrades to operate, and then the changes really do cost a great deal and take a long time. Hardware also is out of date. Its components are at the end of useful life. The biggest cost driver in this contract is really the ticket vending machine equipment, and those are, we need to replace them regardless of what we do with the back office. And then finally, we have had discussions with the board over the past couple of years about PCI compliance. These are the data control, security controls that are in place for most technology these days, and we need to get a system that is in compliance with PCI. In 2014, MTS was the took over from Sandag as the administrator for the Compass Card. At that point, we decided we'd better take a look at this system and really understand what its state of repair is. We hired a fare system consultant to review the technology in the marketplace, as well as to come together and bring together what our objectives, kind of high-level objectives for fare collection modernization would be. We also researched potential upgrades to the cubic system, which we have had since 2003, but it was a significant cost to upgrade, and it didn't really provide any new functionality, and it didn't include hardware. So the decision was made to go ahead and explore the next generation system. So every department is involved in fare collection. It touches every customer. It's extremely important to us. And so we put together a working group of every aspect of our operation, whether it's bus and rail revenue or marketing, customer service, finance. And it was really led from the top, the CEO, along with the chief financial officer and myself, led the project over the course of the 2 years. We also hired CH2M, who is represented here by Kelly Hines, as they are a leading consulting firm in fare collection systems for transit agencies. And they've been assisting us. So we started with the development of the specific objectives of this system. With the help of CH2M, we hosted a peer agency two-day workshop. It was very intensive. We had all of these agencies who were in different stages of fare collection. Some were implementing their own next-generation system. Some were in the old card-based system. Some were in paper and contemplating what they were going to do next. And so We hosted that, and then we also were hosting vendor demonstrations. We brought them in here. We had a lot of staff kind of playing with the equipment, looking at the back office, trying to understand what was in the marketplace. With all of this feedback and with the additional research done by CH2M and our staff, we were able to bring a white paper to the board in December of 2016. And those were really high-level objectives for the new system. Building on that white paper, we took it to the next level to create a concept of operations. This is a document that's a living document. It's going to be consistently used throughout the process of implementation as well as through the procurement. And it was really designed to set up the specifications for the procurement. The things that we included in what we determined we wanted in the new system included the basic account-based system. Right now we have a card-based system where all of the data is collected at the device and on the card. It's very unwieldy because then you have to push all new changes out to the card and to the equipment. And so there's a lot of room for error in that. It also causes a delay because sometimes the equipment doesn't load. And so if you pre-order online your Compass Pass, it could take up to 3 days before it actually shows up on your card. That is not a functionality that modern people believe, when you can order dinner and it's delivered to your door in seconds, or you know, your Christmas gifts show up on Christmas Eve that morning you just ordered them. So those are the types of things that we wanted to address using an account-based system where all of the data is stored in the account, and it's seamlessly, you can change it yourself as a customer. You can get on the app and just, you know, add product or change your information, change your credit card number, et cetera. It's really easy. And as for us, the back office will be very easy if we want to push out fare changes. Say we want to add a promotional fare. We can do it ourselves. We don't have to do a complete software update or change. So it also opens new features. Families now will be able to have one account for billing, whereas today they have to have a separate card for every person and a separate account for every person in the family. Mobile ticketing will now have electronic validation. We have mobile ticketing today, but it's all site validation at the time, so we'll be able to do it as electronic. And then finally, a really great feature that we would like to implement is fare capping or best fare. Basically, every time a customer taps, the system will automatically load the best product for them, the least expensive and the best value. And so we would like to implement that when we implement the new system. Another thing that we would like to have is open architecture. It gives us a lot of flexibility. Currently, our system is proprietary, so when we make changes, we have to get, you know, the back office changes done by our current vendor. This will allow us to now plug and play with new technologies as they come out in the marketplace. We'll have easy access to APIs, and that will be really the way we get to implement new technologies. It's also improved back office hosting and data reporting. We will be PCI compliant under this type of account-based system, and then we want new hardware. So we're asking for validators and ticket vending machines and parking control, because the Midcoast trolley system requires at two of their stations that we control the parking, and that is something that the Midcoast project would be paying for. So we presented the board with our concept of operations document in July of 2017. After that, we did go out with a request for information to vendors, because we wanted to find out from them, are we asking for something that is truly ready out in the marketplace? And the answer overwhelmingly was it is a feasible project and that it is something that they could accomplish. Then we pre-screened vendors through a request for qualifications. Vendors provided us with high-level responses to our concept of operations and told us the demonstration or how they could demonstrate their system's capabilities. And so we qualified 7 vendors under this and brought them forward into the request for proposals. The RFP was issued in March of this year. It included the technical specifications and process that staff would follow for evaluation. So it was clear to the vendors exactly what they would be rated on and what the points they could earn in each of the various categories. And I'll show you a slide on that. We received 4 proposals, Conduent, Cubic, Innit, and Scheiten Bachmann. We created a 7-member selection panel that would be scoring and ranking the RFP submittals, and as well as we had a number of technical advisors and our procurement staff assisting us. I mention all of the titles here because I wanted you to understand this was not a one department driven process. It was every functionality intended to make sure that we were getting something that was good for all aspects of our operation. And I have the members of the panel behind me here today. It was a big commitment for them. I will mention to you that our trolley revenue manager is retiring at 11:30, so we need to finish the meeting soon. So here's the evaluation criteria that were included in the RFP. As you can see, we were interested in the technical scores. They were very heavy on the technical scores. Cost was important, but we wanted to make sure that we had a system that was good for our customers and met all of the specifications. First evaluation occurred in June. Then we asked for technical and cost clarifications from all 4 vendors. We rescored in July, and then the top 3 ranked proposers advanced to the interview stage, and those were Conduent, Innit, and Cubic. Interviews were held in August, and they included a demonstration. All throughout this, we wanted to actually test the product that we were going to buy. We wanted to make sure that we weren't buying something that was not ready, that it was actually a technology that we could implement immediately, and it wasn't in the research stage. So we had them log into their system and showcase their design approach. We asked a lot of questions about where the proposed system is already deployed, and then we asked them to identify in North America where the system is closest to what we specified, where we could go and actually see the system. So the selection committee, technical advisors, and procurement staff went and conducted site visits. August, we visited Portland TriMet for Innit. August 15th, we visited Vancouver TransLink for Cubic. And August 23rd, we went to Philadelphia to visit SEPTA for proposer Conduent. The site visit included presentations by the vendors, as well as demonstration and meetings with the transit agency staffs themselves to get their ideas about the functionalities of their system, maybe lessons learned in their procurement process or in their implementation, and then field use of the system. We went around, we purchased where available passes at third-party vendors, 7-Elevens or wherever they were selling them. We went on all of the different rail, bus, et cetera. We wanted to really get a sense as to the functionalities of that system. So after the site visit and interviews, the selection committee did rescore. And then we asked for a second set of clarifications because there was a lot of things that we couldn't see on the site visit, so we wanted to really clarify and allow the vendors to have that opportunity to give us more feedback and explanation about what they were proposing. They were received and scored in October. We also, at this throughout the process, reviewed the proposals based on risk. We wanted to understand the ability to complete the project on time, complete the project on budget, and the alignment of the proposed solution with our technical specifications. So when we finally finished our scoring, Conduent received the highest overall score by 0.1 point. Second was Innit. However, their proposal was considered an unacceptable level of risk, very high. The proposed solution has not been designed or implemented, and they verified that in their clarifications at the end. The risk to schedule due to percent of development needing to complete was very high. And then they had an extremely low 10-year operations and maintenance contract cost, which was deemed unsustainable and unrealistic. It was significantly lower than what was proposed by the other vendors. And it also significantly lower than our experience with other types of software. You can see the pricing breakdowns in your attachment. If you want to take a look at those, it's all of the vendors are in there. So November 2, we determined that Innit provided the best value solution to MTS at the lowest risk. They had the highest technical score by 30% over the next highest. The price was also substantiated by our independent cost estimate. And Innit proposed a solution very nearly the same as the specifications, which has been field tested in Portland and proven operable. And I will give you some metrics on that so that you can understand. They have been in operation since August of 2017 with the new system. What are we getting with this system? Well, we're getting brand new equipment. The Hop Fast Pass in Portland is fully implemented. We'll be getting the mobile app with the validator, as you can see on the right. We'll be getting a new website, but that website is up to us. We'll be designing it and making sure that it's what our customers would like to see. New tech ticket vending machines. And the new ticket vending machines will be much simpler to maintain based on the what's in them, because again, it's an account-based system and not a device-based, card-based system. And then we'll have an opportunity to extend our new system out into the retail network, basically like gift cards. You can go in and you can buy it off the shelf and then pay for it at a regular register. You don't need a special device and don't have to deploy something new. And then we'll be able to implement fare capping with this, which it will be a real savings and help to ease how people move around our system. You won't have to think about which fare product should I buy. I'm only going to travel 22 times this. Which one should, you'll just go tap, 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 and you will know that you're getting the best value. So this solution in Portland was, as I mentioned, launched in the summer of 2017. They've done 25 million taps, 400,000 transactions, 260,000 separate accounts have been opened. They already have 496, although I think it's probably higher than that now, third-party retailers, everything from mom-and-pop stores on the corner to 7-Elevens and Vons. And they've only had 516 complaints, which is a true testament, given that they moved from a paper flash pass product to a smart card product. So that's pretty good. This is a breakdown of Innit's costs in their BAFO. The total base contract is $34 million. The options, including the parking solution, is another $3.5 million, and the overall cost is $37 million. So the recommendation today to the board is that they authorize the CEO to execute a contract with Innit Innovations in Transportation to provide an account-based fare collection system and operations, maintenance, and hosting for the next 10 years.
Thank you for a great, exciting presentation. We do have, and I am excited, by the way. No, it's not a sarcastic remark. We do have two request from the public to on this item. So I'm going to start with Michael Horgan. You'll have 3 minutes, following with me, Matthew Sanford.
I just need to get my what I wrote. I really like that you are getting a new fare system. It is definitely needed. Yes, there is no transfers, but it's okay. I really like the fare capping. I think it'll be great, and especially the ability to have multiple accounts on, like multiple cards on one account. That'll be great, and yeah. I also like, well, how are you going to do the disabled people? Like, how are they going to be managed on this? And also, how is NCTD going to be involved in this new fare system? And I also like the ability to tap with a mobile app. Will that be integrated, the card and the mobile app all as one or something like that? I'm just wondering. But yeah, I'm just happy that you're getting a new system finally. Thank you.
Israel Thank you. Can talk to you after it's open.
Morning, Madam Chair, board members. Thanks for having me this morning. My name is Matt Sanford. I am Director of Economic Development for the San Diego Regional Economic Development Corporation. I'm here to speak today about the staff recommendation for item 31 to award the MTS fare collection system to Init, a German-based company that, as mentioned, operates the fare collection system in Portland. I want to preface my comments with respect to the staff's work. I don't know the MTS staff, but I understand the process that a team has to go through to prepare a recommendation like this and the nature of the considerations that are made as a part of that. That said, I want to speak to both the merits and the importance of our current contractor who will not be getting this contract, Cubic Transportation Systems. Cubic is a homegrown San Diego success story, having grown in Kearny Mesa since the 1950s. They currently employ nearly 1,500 San Diegans in the kind of high-skill, high-wage jobs we strive to create in our region and we boast about. They are a binational company with operations in northern Baja, embracing the binational principles that so many of you and so many of us promote and within our greater Mega region. When we travel as an organization to the most important economies in the world, seeking trade partnerships and investment, we actually use CTS as a calling card for San Diego innovation in the same way that we reference Qualcomm, Viasat, Illumina, and other companies who are changing the world and really have world-changing technologies. Those regions all know Cubic. When Mayor Faulkner led our trade mission to Vancouver and when Congressman Peters led our trade mission to London, they stood side by side with CTS leaders to make important announcements about the ways in which Cubic technologies are moving and improving economies around the world. From Boston to London, New York to Sydney, LA and beyond, the story is the same. When the world works to improve and modernize their public transportation systems, they often look to San Diego and they look to Cubic. But here in San Diego, it seems like that expertise hasn't been recognized.
One last sentence, please.
Sorry?
One last sentence.
Okay. We just think from an economic development organization perspective that it's unfortunate that there isn't an economic development consideration. We understand that there are some restrictions around the funding, but when we talk about innovation here in San Diego, we truly believe that, and it seems sometimes like we're not living up to what we're talking about.
Thank you. So with that, we have a couple of board members' questions and answers. Mr. McKellen.
Yes, I was wondering, you say they'll have a card like a Compass card. And will you also be able to have an app on your phone that you can use your phone for either case?
Yes, you'll be able to use it either.
Okay, good.
Just a quick thing about the cards. And right now we have probably, I don't know, 40 or so locations, Vons and Albertsons, where we sell cards, and it's a very laborious process. We need to have equipment at those locations, and you need to sell a product, and it's very time-consuming. This new system, the best way to equate it to, when you walk into an Albert's or Vons or any place right now, you see these end caps with gift cards on it. That's account-based systems. That's what we'll be. Someday we'll have MTS cards right next to Nordstrom's and Macy's. So you'll either be able to pick off an amount that's loaded on it, a $25 card, or just bring it to the cash register and say, put on this amount. The transaction is very quick, very simple, and opens up a network of market areas that's well beyond what we have now. So that's why Portland went to 500, because they do business with a company like Blackhawk that has the integration of all these gift cards. The second thing that it does is that it makes it more affordable for people. With fare capping, right now if somebody needs to buy a $72 monthly pass, they have to shell out the $72 all at once. This way, if they, let's say they buy a day pass, it's $5 a day, they'll buy that, 14 times before they, and then it'll convert to a monthly pass. So it's much more affordable. Even on the senior disabled, they can go trip by trip and build up to the monthly pass there too.
Thank you, Paul. Mr. Hall, and following would be Mayor Salas.
So it sounds like you did really well on the, being really detailed and everything, so I do appreciate that. I know companies a lot of times make promises that are fictitious at best. But Cubic, were they totally out of line, or how were they?
Cubic has always been a great partner with us. There's no price debate
wise,
about
just
that.
Outpricing.
They've been helpful in maintaining the system that we've been trying to keep propped up for these years while we did this. The technology that Innit is offering is truly tested and truly a product that we could interact with.
I was just bringing up his concerns more than anything else.
But their price was also the highest price by a significant amount.
That's the problem. The reporting part, how are we going to say I make a profile I have a profile of myself and they ask my age and things like that. Are we going to be able to get that data and maybe use that to give a special fare sometime? Or if I'm like a Padre fan, to give me a special rate down there? Are we able to do any of that kind of integration in the future?
There are personal information concerns there in utilizing customer data.
They would have to release it, obviously.
But this system does provide us the flexibility to do off-peak, on-peak, just do a lot of different things that just currently we cannot.
Because that's exactly what I was concerned with. I want to make sure that we've looked for the future, not just, here's 2018 or whatever. We want to look through 2030 at that point. Finally, the 516 complaints, I assume that you looked at them, and were they, hey, I couldn't figure out how to use the app, or were they really good ones? Actually, did you look at them? I guess that's the look I'm getting.
These numbers came from Portland, and if I'm not mistaken, that 500 were just comments in total. So some may have actually been commendations and not just complaints. But no, they did not share with us the specifics of each complaint or each call.
Well, and having worked with software in my lifetime and knowing how it can backfire on you and getting calls on Christmas Day, probably a good idea that we do maybe try and get that information and just look at it and just say, hey, it's 516 people. What did they say? Was it good comments? Was it bad comments? Because in those 516 will be somebody that says, this happened on this day, and that's a glitch that we'll have to fix before we get it.
Yeah, that's a good comment. We do have some evidence. When we went and met with the in Portland with the staff, they did tell us some of the glitches that happened early on, and one was not being sure that their network was capable of transmitting that much data, and that was something that we took lots of notes on and make sure that that's not a failure of our system.
Mary Salas.
Yes, thank you very much. So I read the report, and you were very, very thorough in your explanations, and I was really impressed by the due diligence that you had, because I think that, like all of us, and with our history of Cubic, that we would have preferred to continue the relationship with Cubic. And when I was, reading the cost differential, that was something that I couldn't get over. However, I've been around the block enough times to know that a lot of times when you have a huge contract like this, that there could be change orders and there could be costs that you don't anticipate. So when you were doing your due diligence within it, did you delve into their past performance relative to to asking for, you know, to having to do change orders and additional cost to the agencies that, that were working with them. Did you do any of that exploration?
And on that regards, there were change orders because that's just a natural flow of projects. There's always change orders. But also some of these change orders were due to agency, transit agency demands. So we had to weigh that. And while some were could have been deficiencies on the vendor, most of these we realized, and not just particular to Enid, but to the other vendors, were aspects that the transit agency themselves would be more of the culprit behind the decision. Mm-hmm. So changing a policy, things like that, that would influence changes in the scope.
And that was a question that was asked at all three site visits of the current clients of the vendors, was asking about what prompted change orders, how often, how frequent, and the magnitude. So that was certainly something that we anticipate will happen, but we have a much better idea of going in of what we can expect.
Okay, and so that I know that on really huge projects that many years ago, the city of Chula Vista implemented a policy where we would ask for a guaranteed maximum price on a contract. So you would have the initial, the initial cost of the project, but you would also ask whoever was performing that to provide you with a guaranteed maximum price, so that if there were change orders, that it would be protected under that guaranteed maximum price. Do you think that MTS needs to do anything like that to protect against cost overruns?
A contract structure basis, it is set up as a not to exceed amount. Mm-hmm. So that's the amount. It's kind of the same thing as a guaranteed maximum price. And then any change order that would exceed the board threshold would have to come before you guys for approval. So that would also make sure that we have the checks and balances against cost overruns mm-hmm. in the project.
And then just one final consideration that we have to take into account is project readiness for when the Midcoast Trolley opens. And so what was your assessment of the three different competitors and being able to meet that timeline?
In the risk register, we determined that, and it would be probably the only one that could meet the deadline.
Okay, thank you. Those are all the questions I had. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Salas. Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and I want to thank staff for all the work that you've done for some time. This clearly has been a very thorough, iterative, deliberative opportunity to be able to provide something that I think the San Diego community has hungered for a while. I'm very excited for the steps forward that we're going to be taking for this, and I really want to acknowledge the members of the review panel that put in all that time and effort to be able to really try and do this in a fair, transparent, and accurate way to really bring us the information on which to make this decision. I'm excited that fare capping is something that we're exploring just generally as a policy, and that we're able to do that through a system opportunity like this. And, I'm glad that Mary Salas asked the question about change orders and possible maximums, because we see that as well on many very high dollar items that the city has to weigh, and that's been a concern of mine sometimes too, where somebody comes in low and then they have a pretty significant, sometimes doubling or more, change order number one. So I guess just to again reiterate and get on the record, I understand sometimes if the client MTS wants to have a change in circumstances, but were you able to review some of the past performance for these companies for change orders that were related to unforeseen circumstances that might have been come from their short-sightedness on the bid?
We didn't come across any that were red flags for the project. And we spoke to the agencies that we visited and kind of dug at all those the different change orders and how they came about, and there weren't any significant red flags.
Good to hear. Thank you. Sorry.
And that's why also in our approach for this procurement through the CONOPS, we focused on a core system. We reduced integrations to avoid having additional cost and timeline overruns.
Okay, thank you. And in your evaluations, and particularly in your site visits, I didn't really see this called out, but I wanted to see if you really talk to people. We get in there sometimes as experts and as you know, those that are trying to look at a very structured way of measuring things, but did you talk to customers and find out whether or not quantitatively or qualitatively the systems were working for them?
We mainly spoke to the transit agencies and the vendors under direct presentations. We went out into the street and we tried utilizing their systems, their respective systems, but we didn't really pull customers.
That might be helpful. It doesn't obviously stop me from wanting to act here today, but I see this too on some of our city contracts where we have people that come back time and time again for additional work or bids, and we have a past performance record, and sometimes they've not been the best of operators in our neighborhoods. And so that kind of information about how we're actually engaging with citizenry, I think, is really helpful for contracts, especially this magnitude going forward, because as you're doing all your measurements, sometimes you talk to the actual bus rider and saying, hey, how do you like this new feature? How do you like this new technology? And maybe it's just something that's not working in practice. Ms. Cooney?
Well, I will comment to you that it was determined that neither the Vancouver nor the SEPTA was the solution that we had spec'd. And so talking to the customers about their, how they felt about those two systems would not have been, it's not the system we were being offered or proposed.
Understand, but the Portland one, which is in front of us right now, might have been helpful to kind of know what, you know, the average user's experience was with that too, which I presume will be positive. Mr. Hall's point as well about the number of complaints, I'm also mindful that while there's 516 complaints, it was 25 million taps. So I think that the ratio is pretty good for those that chose to actually call in and issue a complaint. And then finally, this is a 10-year contract, substantial period, many milestones that need to be met, especially in the development of this. Are there any outcomes or can you talk generally about some of the outs that MTS might be able to exercise to hold them accountable to meet the milestones, and what might be some options a couple years in if we're substantially behind?
Well, we do have key performance indicators that applies mostly to once we're out and implement it, where we can penalize the company for not fulfilling certain performance metrics. But earlier on, we have milestones where through design phases, integration testing, and all of the build-up aspects of the project, that we can hold them, hold payment and hold them accountable for that point.
Yeah, and I think it's important enough that maybe, Kelly, do you want to talk about some of those key performance indicators that would potentially cause damages to the company?
Sure. The key point of this new system is it's account-based. It eliminates the delays of the card-based system that we have now, 2 to 3 days to receive an auto load from a purchase over the internet. So maintaining that back office connectivity in real time is huge. So if that connectivity drops below a 99.99%, damages are assessed. So it's equipment reliability, it's the uptime of the equipment, it's the connection to the back office, it's the failures in individual pieces of hardware, top to bottom, are for the ongoing O&M, and as Israel stated, during the capital implementation phase, it's milestone-based. So payments are made when significant milestones are achieved.
Excellent. No, good assurances. Thank you for elaborating on that. And then just a final comment. Of course, I always, want to support San Diego businesses where we can. And I also recognize in our consent agenda that we have a 3-year extension of the existing contract as well to get us to this point of transition. But it's a necessary transition that's going to improve the customer experience and improve opportunities, I think, for all of our users. And done in such a very methodical and controlled way, I think that we have something very positive to look forward to, and I'm very excited about the outcomes of this work, so thank you.
Just a couple of comments. When it comes to KPIs, we have arguments about reliability to the third decimal point. So it's 99.999. And those were real issues in 99.99 versus 99.999, because they have an impact in how much systems are down. So we took that extremely seriously. One of the other things that people should recognize also, at least where I think the whole fair collection system is going for a good chunk of people, is credit cards, using your Visa card. And it, I think it's especially important for a community like San Diego, where we get so many visitors that, you know, they come into a system and it's hard to understand how to do it. When open payment systems like they have in Canada and like they have in Europe, where they are contactless Visa cards, you're going to be able to walk onto a bus and hold your Visa card up, and it's going to interact with our software and take the fare off. So you won't even have to learn about that. Just use that. And I think that's the wave of the future. New York is pushing that right now. It's really been the credit cards that have been, you know, behind on that. So this system will be certainly open to that. And, you know, I just want to make one comment because this decision did not come easy to the group, as you can tell by the length of it. And I want to recognize Cubic because I've worked with Cubic ever since I got here 15 years ago. And Matt Newsom is here from Cubic, and I wanted to recognize him and his team for a job well done with us over the years. Wasn't always easy, but we got through it, and, you know, we have a very reliable system, and everybody should know that. And we certainly recognize that they're a local company. They do local jobs. It's a matter for us, one, is that we have to be very careful about any local preference with federal dollars, which is not allowed. And secondly, you know, if we have a product or two products, a choice of two products that we both through due diligence feel that they can do the job and do the job as specified, then we need to take the price that is the lowest, given all those things, for the best value for this organization as well as the taxpayers. So.
Thank you, Paul. Mr. Sankey.
Thank you, Mr. Jablonski, for those remarks, and Mr. Ward and Mary Salas, thank you for your questions. They covered a much ground that I was actually wondering about. And in terms of the nimbleness and the ability of us to deliver the right product for folks with public money, I have a tremendous amount of confidence that this process has produced the right recommendation. I would like to hear some comments on the integration with the NTCD fare system, because we are one region, and it's very important that we operate a regional transportation system. So those comments would be nice. And since we've known this has been coming for so many years, this particular purchase, is already in the budget ongoing forward, and so it's important that the public recognize that this is something we've been planning for. It's not going to be a big budget hit that we weren't expecting. So comments, please. Thank you.
So with North County Transit District, they just had chosen not to continue with us through the procurement process, but they did want us to include that an option for them to buy into the system. And we actually have a meeting set up next week with them to start that process. They've indicated that that is, in fact, what they want to do. So they should be fully integrated with us come 2021.
Thank you, and also want to thank my colleagues for the questions that were asked this morning related to this. I am really excited about this. I truly do mean it. I think this is a long time coming to be modernizing the system and make it hopefully much better for the riders, for our customers that we're responsible for. It, that's an exciting thing. We're actually investing in our transit, and the experience on how you get into the transit is we take it for granted at times, but I think it's very important. So this is something that I'm really supportive of. I also want to acknowledge and thank the team for the incredible work that you've been doing and really assessing what's best for us and utilizing the money that we have to make the best decision forward. So thank you for that due diligence that you took. And it is true, this is something that it's been a long time coming. We programmed it in the budget, as Mr. Sankey reminded us. And I'm just excited. I think it's definitely it's time that we become modern. We're a pretty large region, a pretty large city, and we just need to do much more for the system that we're responsible for and ensure that we're delivering the best technology for our customers. So thank you so much. Can't wait for it to come alive and see it work. So with that, do I have a motion? Thank you, Mr. Shankey. Mr. Diaz.
So I only, first of all, I think everyone, I think, agrees that you folks, staff did a tremendous job on this. I'm really excited about it. So thank you for that. A couple of things that I read the materials, but it wasn't until your presentation that it really struck me how switching to the account-based system really is, you know, all the different doors it opens up. I just saw one door. Yeah, you can go in there and look at your account, but then being able to use cards or, you know, your app and everything was pretty neat. So is Portland or any other folks right now using, with regards to APIs in rideshares, has anybody implemented that already? Rideshares, parking, things like that?
I'm not aware of where they've done it yet, but I know discussions are happening, and that is the goal.
Okay, yes. And then the other thing was, I think you said one of the hiccups was bandwidth or something with regards to data. Is our network have the capacity, or is that something that's included in this project?
So, two things. The difference between the TriMet solution and ours, what we were requesting, one of the lessons learned in our specifications was that TriMet decided to host their solution on site. That is, you know, it's a very tough decision. We decided to pass that liability to cloud hosting, right? Most of our phones, you store your pictures on the cloud. So that also helps us when it comes to PCI compliance. We can reduce that liability footprint for PCI compliance. So that said, we still intend to have PCI consultants and network consultants look over our design and give us their analysis to ensure that we don't have the same issues.
Okay. Okay. So it wasn't really the network, your the backbone that gets all the data, your fiber and all that. That wasn't the issue, but we are okay with that.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're actually planning for 5G on buses and in train stations to really speed things up or have the capability to have the fastest available.
Thank you. So we do have a motion by Mr. Sankey. Do we have a second? Thank you, Ms. Salas. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Moves unanimously.
Thank you very much. Before the staff leaves, Scott, would you stand up? Okay, Scott Donnell is the head of revenue on the trolley side. He's responsible for not only counting all the money, but maintaining all of the ticket vending machines and all the PCIDs and all the hardware associated with the Compass Card system. He spent more than half his career here with the Compass Card system. He's been an extraordinary asset to the organization, hugely helpful. He was integral in this process and was invaluable to it. And as Sharon said, today's his last day after 28 years. We're going to miss you, Scott, and I just wanted to recognize you.
Thank you for your incredible work, Scott. So moving forward with item 32, I'll turn it over to staff. You can please introduce the item. Sharon, item 32.
Paul, did you want to introduce this?
We're going to talk about fares and increasing fares, and it's not all about that. It's about simplification to even make the new fare collection system work even better. I will say that, nobody likes to talk about fare increases. I want to point out that it's been over 10 years now since we've had any increase in our fares. You know, the and what's affected mostly in this is the senior disabled fare. The senior.
If I can please, ma'am, we do have a public comment section to this, so please, if I can have you hold your remarks. You will have your time. Thank you.
So when Sandag introduced this discount as part of Transnet One, the federal requirement for senior disabled is 50%. So at a $72 monthly pass, it would be $36. That's the federal requirement. Under Transnet One, Sandag wanted to have part of Transnet pay for a further subsidy. At the time, it was calculated to be a $6 million subsidy cost, and that's what we initially got under Transnet One. Since Transnet One, ridership under this category has grown significantly, such that today it's costing us about $15 million. We don't get the extra $9 million from Sandag. It's just $9 million of Transnet that we have to use in order to subsidize this pass. So that has been an ongoing issue. Reducing youth certainly has also been an issue. And for families that have multiple children that are going to school, et cetera, that's always pressure on them. It's in that context of simplification and trying to get fares that are a little bit more equitable that we bring this to you today. I want to emphasize that we're not approving a fare increase. You're not approving a fare increase today. Fare increase ordinance rests with Sandag, and that's why this process has been done under that. And so it'll eventually go to the Sandag board for approval as well as a change in the Transnet ordinance. I would also tell you that NCTD, we've worked in partnership with NCTD on this, and NCT board voted also to support and approve this. And the impact on them is far more significant, both on their monthly pass, on their day pass, on their base fares, et cetera. So with that, I'll let staff go.
Good morning. I would like to first introduce Brian Lane, Senior Transportation Planner for Sandag, who has been leading the charge with this particular fare study. So today we'll discuss the fare study goals. We'll touch on the proposed catalog of fares. We'll discuss the public outreach that was conducted and talk about next steps. So the direct goals of the fare study were several. We were to simplify the fare structure. We were to provide a revenue neutral or positive outcome and to minimize the ridership loss as a consequence of these changes. First, I'd like to have you take a look at our current fare catalog. As you can tell, this is just very complex, very confusing for our customers to follow along, a lot of products, a lot of services, and a pass not understood is a pass that will likely not be used. So with that in mind, we proceeded with the project. Several other indirect goals were also to reduce capital cost of the next generation fare system, to lay the groundwork for customer-friendly fare policies such as fare capping, which will require a follow-up fare study to this one. So how did we get to this point? Well, we tested multiple fare alternatives. We also tested varied scenarios and packages that were presented to the board back in March of this year. The board provided feedback, and we went back to the drawing board with NCTD and Sandag, and we refined these packages into one catalog that was presented to the board in September 2018. Here's the catalog that was presented back in September, and the board provided feedback on two aspects. One, to inform the public of the possibility of increasing the adult day pass from $5 to $6, and two, to conduct additional outreach on top of the one officially established by SANDAG. Some of the key aspects that were presented in that catalog from September were the inclusion of an SDM and youth $3 day pass, in addition to simplifying the monthly fares by combining SDM and youth at a 66% discount. Here are some of the coaster increases proposed back in September. And here is a summary of the simplification and policy changes included in that base package. We would have a uniform one-way cash fare for MTS bus and trolley, Sprinter Breeze bus included, at $2.50. We would increase the adult day pass from $5 to $6 with no change to the adult monthly pass price. We would combine the senior disabled Medicare youth discounted fares into one price point at $26. There would be an introduction of a $3 one-day pass for both SDM and youth. The senior age would be raised to 65. Individuals currently between 60 and 65 would be grandfathered in. We would raise the age 1 year at a time. And 3.7% of MTS riders are between the age of 60 and 64. Further fare simplification and policy changes. The NCTD Sprinter and bus fares would parallel MTS bus and trolley with coaster fare increases. There would be a simplified revenue sharing agreement between NCTD and MTS that would allow for easier transferability between our customers. We would also eliminate the 2, 3, 4, and 14-day passes. These passes combined are about 1.2% of our sales revenue. We would also eliminate trolley transfers. This would create a uniform policy with MTS bus. And free bus transfers were eliminated about 10 years ago. This affects about 1.3% of the trolley customers, of the current trolley customers. So on to public outreach. MTS covered 16 different sites, as you see illustrated on the presentation, between San Ysidro, Euclid, El Cajon, Fashion Valley, University Plaza, City College, and several other places. We also held 4 public meetings in the MTS jurisdiction in Chula Vista, the MTS boardroom, El Cajon, and City Heights. During the outreach and at the SANDAG public meetings, we definitely came across a lot of good interaction. We were able to provide as an agency the context as to why the changes were needed to the public, but also as an agency, it was very rewarding to hear the input from the community. Overall, to summarize our interactions, most seniors were opposed to the increase on their fares. And we did get a lot of parents, though, that were excited about providing the youth with a discounted monthly pass. So that was positive feedback there. In consideration of the comments we received from the public, especially the senior disabled community, regarding the high increase on the fares from 18 to 26, we went back to the drawing board with both SANDAG and CTD, and we were able to provide this alternative of only a $5 increase as opposed to the $8 that was proposed back in September. NCTD also had to make modifications to their initial proposal where regarding paratransit rules to cap fares. So here's the new proposed catalog. It includes the $6 adult day pass, a $1 increase. It also includes the $3 SDM and youth day pass, which is a new product, but a very needed product, and the combined 68% discount for both SDM and youth when it comes to all the different monthly prices. So what are the impacts of implementation of this fare study? Well, It requires the Sandac Board action to change the Regional Comprehensive Fare Ordinance. It requires Transnet amendment to alter senior age eligibility. The impact of this new alternative is estimated to increase revenue at $4.3 million for MTS, and it would have an impact of decreasing ridership by $1.8 million for MTS as well. Here's the tentative schedule that we have coming up. The next meeting would be over at the Transportation Committee to recommend to Sandac Board. The ITOC would happen soon after, January 9th. The first reading would occur at the Sandac Board of Directors on January 11th, with a final reading and approval on January 25th, and a tentative enactment of Sunday, February 24th. It is with this that the Board of Directors, we ask the Board of Directors to recommend that Sandac adopt the Regional Comprehensive Fare Ordinance, revisions generated by the fare study as described in Attachment B.
So one other thing I wanted to say, and aside from the other things, we also do have a budget problem, as many of you know. Our deficit now is about $10 million that we are covering primarily with capital. And this doesn't solve all that problem. I think it'll hopefully cover about 40, if we're lucky, 50% of that problem. We still have to get to a sustainable budget, and I think now, especially with SB1 passing, we have some options. Shortly after the first of the year, the Budget Development Committee will be reformed with new board members. And we'll convene that and bring to you, hopefully by the mid-year budget amendment, our solution for this year and next year.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. So we do have several speakers to this item, public comment related to this item. So I'm going to give you 2 minutes for this item, and I'm going to call several of you. If I can just have you be close to the podium and ready to address the board. Really appreciate it. I'm going to start with Richard McNamee, following Lorraine Layton and Martha Welsh.
Thank you. My name is Richard McNamee. Oh. I'm a retired airport shuttle van driver. So I'm interested in transportation. I want to compliment this organization for having the vision of building this extension north on the blue line up to University City. You should be congratulated for your vision. My advocacy is for the youth of San Diego. I think they should have a free ride. Anyway, that's just my advocacy. And two benefits that I can think of. One is that it would be easier to get to school and back home. Also, it would give them an opportunity to get to their part-time work, where they could make money to support themselves and their family. And also, it would give them a greater opportunity to get into healthy outside activities. I recommend also that you do not raise the cost to seniors and the handicap and leave it as it is. However, I noticed there's a disparity between the trolley and the bus. So I would recommend you raise the bus fare up to $1.25 in coordination with the trolley. That makes sense to me. So you'd make a little extra money there. But I also have a vision of the future. And I think your idea of extending the trolley to the airport is a great idea, and it would solve a lot of the traffic problems. but I also would like to see it extended.
One last sentence. Your time is up.
Have I used my minutes?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Thank you so much, Mr. Richard. Sorry. And just before you start, I'm just going to remind the audience for the final time, please remain from making commentary. It's a little bit distracting from our end. You will have your time to address the board, so please, thank you.
Hello? Okay, my name is Lorraine Layton. I'm in El Cajon, California. In a way, yes and no, I'm agreeing with your recommendation, but I have two questions to ask you. If you're going to go to, like you propose, is it possible to have that the and the coaster rates apply to the senior disabled, number one, for the monthly fare? And number two, how is this going to affect that of when you look at your where you have you show it on your phone? Okay, they've already had a breach with this round already of the fare being, how you say, breached and people getting it free and not having the proper fare. Those are my two questions that I wanted to ask you. And number three, I find it very interesting that this last rainstorm, how El Cajon had to borrow, and I quote, several of South Bay's buses because our buses were, how do you say, a little under the weather with being... run down with water from the top of the roof all the way down to the electrical components. Somebody better have some answers.
Thank you, Ms. Martha Walsh. Following Martha will be Ramon Flores.
Hi. One thing. We get a check from Social Security. We only get so much. How could we raise a percentage of the fares to the elderly and disabled when I don't see it a reasonable amount as the percentage? I think equality, to be fair, you should do it the right way. I think right now, I see a lot of disabled and elderly in San Diego that in so much need. We have so much homelessness. People in hotels that are scratching for every penny. I even myself, I don't get other services other states get for senior citizens. Why is all this unbalanced? I don't see head or tails what's happening. I think it's very unfair right now for us to get this big high increase. I think you should all be very compassionate and see the light of day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Reverend Joseph Marchese. Following will be Vianney Ruakaba.
First, I want to thank you very much for allowing the community to respond to this proposed fare increase. I won't belabor the points of the fare box recovery rates with MTS, but some sources quoted as high as 75% on the rail, meaning the trolley. Many of them, like the New Jersey Spotlight, puts the whole MTS system at a fare box ratio, recovery ratio, of around 43%. It's ranked number 6th in the nation as far as MTS is concerned, and many it just stands out as a great highlight for San Diego. But I think it's also important for the seniors aspect and for vulnerable riders of the bus and the trolley to keep this rate affordable and to keep it cost effective to all riders, especially those that are the elderly, the senior citizens, the disabled, those that are on a fixed and low income, even government subsidized families with a fixed income that are retirees and are challenged with psychological and mental disorders that really do challenge them and render them incapable of driving an automobile. That's why, from a compassionate standpoint, MTS really needs to reconsider raising the prices for the most vulnerable and the most susceptible of the senior citizens. Higher prices do reduce ridership. We've seen that in the LA Metro system, where in 2014 they increased the fares and ridership dropped by about 5%. And of course, that's just in the bus. The light rail went down 2.7%, meaning that overall you're looking at a lower ridership by raising prices, especially on those susceptible customers and riders. And finally, a certain dynamic that's happening right now in our country is that gas prices are going down. That means that people have decisions to make with lower gas prices. And basically, the University of Southern California and Dr. Schweitzer and her group talked about lower gas prices.
One last sentence, please.
Mean lower ridership. So let's not decline ridership.
Thank you. We have a timer over here, ma'am.
Good morning. My name is Vianney Rubalcaba, and I'm Transportation and Planning Coordinator at the City Heights Community Development Corporation. First of all, I'd like to thank you, MTS staff, for recommending a cost reduction for the monthly youth transit passes. This reduction is an investment in the future because it helps create a culture that encourages riding transit from an early age. However, we still have some concerns about how some of the increases will affect low-income communities. First, the materials released by MTS along with this item include over 100 pages of verbatim written oral and voicemail comments and excludes survey data from the MTS online and paper survey administered through the beginning of November. It would be helpful for MTS to release a summary of these comments along with the survey data in a format that it's a little more accessible. We reviewed the public comments released prior to this meeting and found that most of them were not in favor of the proposed fare increases. So my question is, how does MTS staff take into account the public input? And then for a decision as important as this, we believe that a Title VI analysis would help inform this important decision to make sure that we're not disproportionately impacting low-income communities. Sandag indicated that the preliminary analysis would be released prior to this meeting, but that analysis has not been included in the materials and is not available on the website that the public has been directed to. When is Title VI used to inform MTS decisions? And finally, how has MTS addressed the inconsistencies between the proposed increases and the policy solutions identified by Sandag in their draft network concept scenarios, which some of them call for a decrease in fares? Sandag projections anticipate a decrease in ridership of 1.8 million riders, but it still considers transit to play a major role in the future of transportation. City Heights CDC looks forward to working with you to reduce barriers to riding transit. Thank you.
Emily Costanzo, following Joanne Hood, and Sophie Wolfram. Ma'am, we are timing each member of the public, so if I can please have you refrain from making comments, that would be great. And that's the last warning. If you continue, I'm going to ask you to step out. I believe the mic is not on, if you don't mind.
Okay. I have a back problem. All right. My name is Emily Costanzo. I'm a teacher with Trace School. We're part of San Diego Unified School District, and we teach 18 to 22-year-olds. We prepare them for the transition from school life to adult life. This is one of my students, Benjamin. Well, we came here today to talk about the fare increase because it's going to have a major impact on the students I work with and their families, as well as the school, our school's budget, and other agencies that the students will transition to when they are done with school. And the money, it's a lot to them, Ben wanted to say. For young people with a disability, a severe disability, they have sometimes no income, extremely low income. They're responsible for using their SSI money, if they get it, to pay for rent, food, bills. And there's not much left. There's not a lot of wiggle room. Because of this, our school provides bus passes to our students that express that need. The families request it, and we will provide it so they can get to school and learn what they need to learn, so they can become productive members of society like they want to be. We have 500 students in our school. They all have disabilities. Yes. And 200 of them receive the passes issued by our school. We refill them every month. And we do have a contract with you guys right now for that. But I'm really concerned about what's going to happen when this fare increase goes into effect. I understood it could happen soon. This is Ben's bus pass. He wanted to show you. This is how we issue our passes. Yeah. It's going to have a major impact on our school's budget. And as you all know, school funding seems to be decreasing. We've just been notified we're going to have a major shortfall next year. And this increase is going to make it worse. And it's not just happening to us, but to also the high schools. They use the SDM passes. It's going to affect them. It's going to affect also the adult agencies, ARC, ARC of San Diego, TMI, PWI. There's many agencies. Passes that are issued by...
One last sentence, please.
Thank you. And also passes that are issued by the San Diego Regional Center. And I hope that you will take into account the impact on all of these nonprofit organizations as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Joanne Hood. Sophie Wolfram? Oh, Joanne Hood.
Hello. Thank you for having me here. I do appreciate all the good things you guys have done over the last 40 years that I've been riding the bus off and on. And I gave up my van about 4 years ago to ride the bus again because they said, you know, use the public transportation. It's better in all ways. And it generally is, but I'm on a fixed income. I'm a senior disabled on SSI. I get $910 a month to live on. Could you live on that? And I appreciate the senior monthly pass because it gets me to the store and to my doctors. And that's about the extent of which I ride because it takes all day to get a few places, which I understand and I'm willing to work with that. But the increase is that you did have was for $26, which is almost half of the existing rate today added on. And that comes to $312 a year to ride the bus. When you're only making what I'm making, that's a lot. That's almost $100 added on. The 23 is helpful compared to the 26. And I understand we haven't had a raise in a few years, and I was expecting like a couple of dollars or something. But for when you're making what I'm making, that's a big increase, $5 a month, because your rent's increasing every year, your food bills, your doctor bills, your prescriptions, and we're not getting those kind of increases. We're on a fixed income, so every dollar means something to us, and it makes a difference whether we get to those doctor's appointments or get to the store to buy food with what money we do have. I understand a little bit of an increase, but this was too much.
One last sentence, ma'am. Your time is up.
Excuse me?
One last sentence.
Oh, that's it. Thank you for everything.
Thank you. Sophie Wolfram.
Not here. Stacy Williams.
Hi, my name is Stacy Williams, and I'm also a TRACE teacher. I teach 18 to 22-year-olds with disabilities, and we are really concerned about this increase on individuals with disabilities because many of our students, as it was mentioned, do not have any income, and living in San Diego is very expensive already, and when you have, even if you're on SSI, you're getting less than $1,000 a month. So $5 to us may not seem like a lot, but to these individuals, $5 is a lot. It could be a meal. It could be something, you know, that they need for themselves. And so I really just want to encourage this board to not increase the fares on the disabled and on the elderly as well. These are two groups of people that really don't need more barriers. They don't need to have to spend more money on these things. There has to be another option if that you're looking at increases and stuff like that. But please don't increase on those two groups. Thank you.
Lionel LePage. Following would be Jean Columbus.
Hello. Hello, everybody. My name is Lionel. You guys confused me a little bit because I noticed that you lowered the senior bus pass from $26 to $23. Am I on? And it confused me because for a second there, I thought you guys cared because, you know, it's discrimination is what it is. You're taken from the poor and given to the to another group. You can't just target one group to raise and take the burden of everybody else. And it's kind of hard to bend over and talk, but. Yeah, that's fine. I know I only got 50 seconds left. But my point is that, you know, the seniors and the disabled, like the lady said before, that they're vulnerable. They can't go out and get extra jobs, and they're forced to take buses they can't drive. And I think that's why you're targeting them. And that's my point. I'm done.
I'm very conscientious of time. I'm proud to say I'm an Army vet, and I've been to college. I'm a college graduate, and I know what it is to work. I worked at McDonald's at Fresno Pacific when I was in Fresno going to a religious college. I worked my way. I went to a religious camp, a Mount Hermon Christian camp during the summer. So this mess about the students, you want to lower them because they got 10 or 15 siblings. I didn't tell them to have all them, they mama to have all them kids. I'm 68 years old. I chose not to have children. I'm a career woman. I had a career with the government. For 35 years, I rode the 150 to the VA hospital, and I retired in 2013. I'm disabled. I got a right knee that I had surgery on in July. I'm getting ready to have the left one done tomorrow. And this mess about disabled going to $26, that's ridiculous. I get Social Security and my retirement, and that's it. I'm working on getting a pension for my PTSD from the military. But this $26, I refuse to pay. I just refuse to pay it. And I see this lily white board. There's no representative from colors, no color representative. I don't even know if there's nobody from the union here or no rider representative. I see why y'all come up with this mess, with this decision.
Thank you, ma'am. Francisca Salcedo. Brooks. And Clive Richards.
Good morning. I've been using public transportation for 34 years and exclusively for the past 6 years due to a medical condition. And while I understand it and I really support a simplification of the fare system, I really feel that given our city's high cost of living for low-income families like myself and individuals, this is not a good way to reduce the deficit. There has to be a different way because for many people like myself, we fully depend on MTS services. I have two children, two young children, and while I really applaud the reduction in their monthly passes, I do feel that for the elderly, for the disabled, it would really be a huge burden that would reduce their quality or quality of life. I've seen families who are unable to attend their school's committee meetings because they're unable to pay for bus fare. I've seen families who are unable to go on family outings or attend other events because they're unable to afford bus fares. These are like real people who may not be able to be here, but they truly have... They completely depend on public transportation, and so I hope that you don't make this recommendation, but that there is another way to make up this deficit, and because San Diego, it's public transportation is vital, that's why we're all here, so I just hope that we find a different way. Thank you.
Brooks. Cly.
Sorry, I was waiting for someone else. Chair Gomez, members of the board, Clive Richard, college area. My immediate response to what fare increases, of course, is always negative, but I've been talking with staff, and I'm not sure, but I think I have to support it. I do have a couple of questions. One question is, what is the percentage of the 1.8 million riders that MTS will lose? What is that percentage? I'd rather than think of this as a fare increase, trying to think of it as a simplification of the fares. Multiple fares are very confusing, and I'm glad we're doing the process of simplifying. And that's a, to me, I want to emphasize that. A system that is easily understood is more able to be used, and I'll leave you with those last 30 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. Michelle Crew. Rob Stefke.
Good morning. I hope I heard my name. I'm Rob Stefke. The acoustics in this room are terrible. I'm here to speak against the senior increase. My trouble, and I'm a daily transit rider. I've ridden the transit system extensively in L.A., Orange, and Riverside counties. And looking through the comments from the various public meetings, which I also attended, it seems that by and large the comments are about the senior increase. What I don't get is the simplification about why we need to have the youth fares at the same level as the senior fares. They're very different classes. I understand the challenges for the youth as far as the families, but I don't think that should be put on the backs of the seniors. And while that may not be the intention, certainly the appearance is there. And especially in light of the reduction from 26 to 23, I noticed the senior went down to 23, but the youth also went down to 23. So that doesn't really, that still makes it look like the 28% seniors are going up is at the expense of the 36% reduction that the youth get. So I don't understand it. I think it would well serve this agency to at least have some sort of a gap between the senior and the youth fare, even $5 if it's say, for example, seniors are 20 and the youth get 25. There still is a savings for the youth. It's still a very minimal increase for the seniors, and the seniors have earned something. Their lives are a lot more challenging than the kids. The kids have their lives to look forward to. The seniors, not so much. This is our last hurrah, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you. And with that, that concludes our public comment for this item. I see a couple of lights from my colleagues. So before I call you, I'm just going to take the time to actually acknowledge this is not an easy conversation. This is never easy whatsoever, nor cutting services is easy. So we're very much, I can reassure you that we are committed in making sure that we work hard in making sure that we're making it more accessible to our riders, to all our customers, not a particular customer focus at all. So there's no question whatsoever that this board is committed to that. But we haven't done this in 10 years. And I actually had a brief conversation with the new executive director of SANDAG, which I'm excited to have him on board. One of the things that he too is committed in making sure that we actually are creating a public transportation system that is free for the riders. So I'm hoping that we can get there, but that's going to take some leadership, and that's going to take more resources to be able to invest in the system. So ultimately, that's where we're going. But right now, in order for us to maintain the system that we have to make adjustments. Or the other adjustment is cutting services. So this is not an easy conversation to be have. And I think one of the things that we're losing today because of the impact to the seniors and disabled, and I get this, and I'm very sensitive to that, is the fact that we're making it more accessible to our future riders, to the youth, by reducing their fees. I think that's something to not ignore. We heard from the public, and I'm glad that staff is making changes to what was being proposed. Instead of a $5 increase to seniors and disabled, the proposal is to do $5. So that's a change based on the input that was gathered from the public. So I just also don't want to acknowledge, I want to acknowledge that and not miss the opportunity. And just making it as simple as possible in terms of fares, I think it's something that is much needed. We're so far ahead in terms of just not having clarity and having a system that is very confusing to our riders. So I really don't want to lose that. This is not an easy conversation. It never is. It will never will be. But I can reassure you, at least from my end, I'm very much committed, and I'm going to do everything possible to identify other resources that we can bring back to the system and readjust this conversation in the near future. So having said that, I'm going to call on my colleagues. Mr. Hall.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. One thing that I would like to suggest, and it may have already been thought of, but as a tiered system coming down, where we bring in possibly, as the gentleman said, I'd actually written that down, maybe bring youth down to 25, and then the seniors raise them to 20, and then over maybe a two-year period raise them 22, then finally 23, and over a longer period of time. Given it's 10 years, I'm assuming that we're going to be changing these rates prior to 10 years, but by bringing in a tiered system, it's gradual, it's not as abrupt, we're not throwing it on one side, and the youth will help pick up they'll still get a rate decrease, but maybe not as long. The other one is the adult fares, you know, one day pass, a lot of that might just be tourist, whereas we're looking at bringing in maybe the tourist rate, bringing them a little higher right now also. And then on top of that, by that time, hopefully the new software will be in, and we can start playing with these a little more, and which will actually be helpful for everybody. So it's just my thoughts.
Thank you. Mr. McLennan.
Yes, this hasn't been mentioned, but you said we have a $9 million deficit, but how much money is coming in from SB1 over a period of the next year, 12 months?
It's about $12 million in operating and $5 million in capital.
So this will have an excess of $3 million over and above the $9 million deficit. Could any of this be used for the disabled?
Well, we haven't had the discussion with the Budget Development Committee, but I can almost say that what our recommendation will be for the start the discussion with the Budget Development Committee that to handle the $10 million deficit is that we have this fare increase that will bring in about $4 million, and that the last $6 million come from SB1 funds. And that'll be roughly a little bit more than a third of those funds. The rest of the funds we'd like to program for new services. We've already have $3 million allocated for the new 955 BRT in South Bay that would run from Otay Mesa through Iris to Imperial Beach. That's about $3 million in operating funds. And we have a slew of other services that we'd like to put in that we just can't afford now. And I think, SB1 was passed with that objective, is that transit be given more money to be able to expand its services. So we're not trying to gut it all by just making up our budget, but do it in a responsible way where we take a portion of it and keep a portion for expansion.
Was there any thought, as Ron mentioned, of the tiering of maybe a small increase every year rather than all at once, because that way these people could plan for it over a period of time and they'd know what was coming in their direction? Because they do get probably yearly increases on their Social Security or whatever they're getting, so which would offset part of this. So,
yeah, I can tell you that was mostly guided by simplification. In what we've heard over the years, there's been certainly a number of comments to the board about reducing youth pass. We worked with the school district to do that pilot. So trying to get youth pass at least up until the age of 18 reduced for families. I mean, the reality is, our whole ridership, 70% of our ridership is low income already. So if you look at this fare increase, it's not just on seniors. The $6 day pass is on adults. And you can see that we have a lot of riders that pay the day pass in order to get to work, and they're adults, and that's why they use that. So the burden is being shared. But I think to answer specifically your question, it was meant for simplification so that we would have a full fare pass and a discounted pass, and that we would go forward with that. And then with the new fare collection system, with having fare capping, it would be it wouldn't have to be put out all at once, but could be delivered in increments. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Diaz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gosh, I was scrolling through the attachments you gave us and looking at all the emails and letters and scrolling. And then listening to all the testimony here, I mean, it's just wrenching. I don't know how we do this. And I get it. We have a $10 million deficit. I think my suggestion is, and I know it's easy for us here to put it back on staff. I know that would be the simple thing to do. And we just raised in Chula Vista as a council member. I swore I would never get political, but here I see what we're doing here. And there's a need. There's no doubt that we need to change the fares. There's no doubt. I don't think anybody will disagree with that. But I look at this, and there's folks out there. And my district in Chula Vista is one of the poorest. And that's where I grew up. And there's folks out there with fixed incomes that just cannot absorb this. And the whole problem isn't just here in San Diego. This problem really is, and forgive me, I'm going to get a little political, is occurring hundreds of miles north of us in the White Building in Sacramento. When we look at the minimum wage thing, right? We just had to increase our budget $8.5 million to cover that. We're looking at our EV vehicles, what's going to cost this organization. I mean, in the mandates that come from that little building up there are causing this problem. And so when you folks look at us, I hope that you look at it, it's not us, but we have to make a decision here. It's a white building up north of us. And so I look at this, I go, well, what are we going to do? And then I looked at the folks that are on fixed incomes. SB1 cost my people in my district $400 to $700 a year. They're not making it paycheck to paycheck. It is literally costing them a decision whether they're going to get fuel or they're going to get a loaf of bread. And I was struggling with that months ago. And now today I look at this and I'm going, wow, that's another loaf of bread. I'm ready to tear up right here. I don't know what I'm going to do. I think that what we need to do is take Ron Hall's some of his suggestions. I don't know that we can put this on SB1 or another bond because we have deficits that we're going to deal with. But so what I'm looking at is we have fixed folks with fixed incomes and folks that are getting raises. And so where do we put some of this? I think there needs to be a better balancing where we maybe put less on those with fixed incomes. And there's going to be pain anywhere we go. There's no doubt. And it's easy for me to sit here and talk about this because we can all absorb it, but there's folks out there that just cannot. And I know it's easy for me to say, let's bring it back to staff, but I think, I don't want to just say put it back on staff. My suggestion is look at some of the suggestions that have been put out there right now and look at it. Where can we work? Maybe the youth is where, and I know we don't want to decrease anything we do. Any little adjustment we make is going to hurt ridership. There's no doubt. And that's what Paul has to deal with every day. But, gosh, I don't know that I can do it. And so my suggestion is that we need to sharpen our pencils. We need to get maybe a little bit more creative. And maybe we take it back to staff. And maybe staff comes back and we come back with the same answer. And so I don't know that I can support this today. I think I would rather send it back to staff. Give it another shot. Maybe with new technology, some of these things, we can lessen that. But gosh, scrolling at those letters and emails and listening to everybody here, very, very tough. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and I also want to thank staff. I know that this, like Chair Gomez said, this is a very difficult decision. It's a very tricky balance that we are trying to weigh in on to be able to, of course, meet our ongoing needs to be able to successfully operate this system, but also make sure that the pain and the burdens of this are appropriately redistributed. And so I see a very, very mixed bag here with this proposal here today. On one hand, I really appreciate the work that we're trying to do to simplify the system and really make it easier on the users across many different kinds of fare types. Certainly acknowledge the youth cost decrease there. I think that's laudable, especially as you multiply the number of youth in some family is really going to have an impact for many of those families in the areas we serve. And then also I think on a couple of go-arounds on this, we're able to reduce the proposed senior fare increase. It was proposed to be significantly higher than even what is coming here before us today. And that we are introducing a day pass at $3, half the price of a normal adult fare. So there on the positive side is, you know, really something to look forward to that, you know, we, I think it could be very supportive of. But on the other side, you know, I, not having been here, I know I'm still in an alternate slot as of today and not having seen, I think, the deep conversation the board considered earlier this year. I wondered, you know, I don't see any fare increase here. We see some day pass increases, but a $72 monthly adult rate, had it been studied to go up to $75, could that have been offsetting maybe some of the other proposed increases to other categories of riders? Was that one of the scenarios looked at?
Yeah, we looked at raising it to 76 and 84. Is that right?
78 and 84.
78 and 84.
And when you looked at all of these scenarios, because the other thing that's actually system-wide and for other broader goals here, very concerning to me, is that with the approval of this and the anticipated changes to ridership, you're going to see a decrease of 1.3 million riders, and that's in this own study. So if the goals of the study were to simplify the system, maintain revenue neutral or positive, and it seems that's something we're trying to correct just really looking at this from a budget perspective, but to also minimize ridership loss, I'm not satisfied with that third goal. And if that is the outcome of an action here today, and that is truly a projection that will be realized, then what, for whom are we building this system to serve? Are we just going to start a downward spiral where costs are going to continue just to go up so that we can maintain a budget, but ridership will continue to fall, and then all of a sudden nobody's even, we're not even having a functional system here. And that deeply troubles me, especially as we're trying to meet climate action goals, because if I just sort of straight line 1.3 million rider trips over the entire year, that's 3,500 trips per day throughout the calendar year. Those people need to get somewhere. Are they shifting to auto? We want to be shifting in the other direction. So for me, I feel like I want to see a little bit more alternatives analysis here, although I recognize that some of those alternatives have already probably been well vetted through staff and the board previous to this decision here today. So it particularly is difficult with, I think, the as Mr. Diaz had mentioned, you know, some of the individuals, and you mentioned 75% of those are low-income riders and, you know, may sort of also span into the senior or disabled categories as well, too. But those that are going to be heaviest hit from this decision, I think, are just going to have more compounded challenges. And, you know, with, you know, respect but objection to, you know, what we heard here today, I recognize that we do have a lot of other mandates that are placed on us, but those are mandates that, frankly, I can support. I think it is good that we are raising the minimum wage, and that has also been validated by our own voters to be able to do. And that's important here because even though some costs on one side are, and how that affects our cost and revenue balance from the system, how that's impacting society means that some of our own employees are able to afford the rising cost of housing for themselves. And when I look at, you know, what many of our specially trained engineers and technicians and others that help build our system, that we look for prevailing wage opportunities and other really good kinds of incomes to be able to support the people that we want to work here, to be able to support our own system, I think is a positive thing. So these are all the tricky balances that we need to be able to weigh to understand not just how things are happening for the system itself, but what we are doing for societal impact for the people and the public that we serve. So it's not a slam dunk to just say yes today. This definitely comes with some pains. And as I hear, I think, some final comments, I'm going to be thinking about pretty deeply. But, you know, I just would be curious if staff or the chair might entertain another month or two to look at other alternatives that can tweak around the edges, that can maybe help to kind of blunt some of the impact that we're proposing here. Not wed to that, but I'd like to hear additional comments about what, if any, options we have going forward. My last comment is that I recognize that we need to make a decision. We need to have something that will provide some solvency from a budget perspective going forward. But I think need to, as someone said, sharpen our pencils and look for any other alternatives out there that might try to satisfy multiple goals: ridership, who gets impacted, and how we're able to find that sweet spot for solvency at the same time.
Just a couple of comments. And a lot of times it's really difficult to convey all the dynamics of the finances of the organization And Councilmember Diaz talked about capital needs, and that goes into it. Ridership loss, you know, the ridership loss is projected by some formula that gets used, okay? I frankly don't think the ridership loss is going to be what it is. And generally, with fare increases, you get a ridership dip, and then it builds again. And it's happened that way all the time. When we had a fare increase in 2009, we had our highest ridership ever by 2013, 2014. So those dips are usually short-lived. We do think about equity, and I know it appears that you know, we're singling out one group because we have one group here speaking, but it is affecting all. Youth are getting a discount. There's no doubt about that. But youth are part of families and working families, and it's part of the reason that we've had this inequity with a $72 monthly pass, the adults subsidizing this $18 monthly pass. And they're subsidizing to the tune of about $10 million a year in order to keep that there. So, you know, we try to maintain it, have a system that is reasonable for all to access. And even at $23, you know, that's about 75 cents a day to ride the entire system as many times as you want, whether it's trolley, bus, or whatever. And I think that's incredible access for that price. And the $72 is the same way. I think if you're working and you're coming up and you're accessing this system for basically, you know, $2.15 a day, I think we have good value for transit compared to a lot of other systems around the country. I see fares actually much higher. We've taken all this into account, and just borrowing money from capital to solve the operating budget is a, you know, it's kind of a false sustaining, because, you know, we have 52 rail cars that are old that need to be replaced. That alone is going to cost well over $200 million, and we're going to be dealing with that next year. We do have we're going to have a mandate to start to electrify the fleet. That's going to have a cost impact. We want to maintain the system in a state of good repair. That always has an impact. So we think about all these things as we go through this process. You know, I've been through I don't know how many fare increases in my life. Nobody ever says I like this and I give it to me. But they do when it comes, if the prospect, the alternative is to cut service. And with a $10 million deficit, we're getting to the point where we're going to have to make changes in order to be sustainable. And every survey that I've ever seen with the public, if the alternative is cut service or raise fares, it's raise fares. I think the raise, and I know people will disagree with me, but I think it still provides a good value for people in San Diego to do it. And that's why we came to this amount. I know the seniors were very vocal. And that's why we reduced it down to 23. But I think it is equitable across our ridership in terms of who's getting impact. Maybe not if you're buying a $72 monthly pass, but we have a lot of people coming up from South Bay, and I don't mean to focus on that. You can see them lined up at TVMs buying day passes every day in order to get up to work here. It's going to impact them, too, at a dollar a day, not 30 cents a day or 15 cents a day. So...
Thank you, Paul. And I'm just going to add, in regards to the ridership lost, this board has made an effort to change that. We, earlier on in the year, we added money to improve some of the routes. And there's no question that if we are not to do this, the next conversation is reduction of some routes. We have a bigger ridership loss by doing that. So that is something that I wish to not have. And it's something that I'm going to fight really hard not to do, just because we've been investing, we've been putting back and improving some of the routes, and we need to do much more. But by doing that, I can guarantee you that ridership will be lost even more than what's projected with this. So So with that,
Madam Chair, I have one quick question.
Yes.
If I may, for Sharon, can you help us understand fare capping and as it relates, if there's any relationship with our senior and disabled riders, meaning that our senior and disabled riders right now having to purchase a monthly pass, correct?
Yeah, we don't offer a senior disabled a day pass currently, but we're proposing that because that's been one of the big comments we've been receiving for years is they would like to have that as an option. They may only travel once a week, and so that's more economical for them. And then on top of that, they are given the option to pay just for the one-way cash fare, which is a half price, so it's $1.25.
So if a senior or disabled rider, say, use the our services maybe twice or three times a month, it would actually be lower than the amount that's currently at even $18, right?
Yeah.
Using fare capping.
So, yeah, once we get fare capping in, they'll be able to do that, but they could calculate that themselves today, you know, if this gets approved.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Vice Chair Rios, the public comment has been closed, so I apologize. Vice Chair Rios.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, I wanted to speak because I represent a very low-income community, and as was mentioned here today, 70% of our riders are low-income, and it is a difficult decision. This has been coming before us for some time. I think it was in September when there were packages that were discussed at this dais, and none of those packages were ideal. And so there is a situation where, in order that we don't lose services, that you have to look at other alternatives and how we can accommodate that. Since I've been here in 2011, I think on a regular basis we have had folks come forward asking for student reductions or student passes because there's also a great need for students to get to their places that they need to empower them to move forward. And I've heard that time and time again. We're not seeing them here today, but that's something that we really wanted to focus on and to making sure that our students were heard. But with that being said, there are a few questions I'd like to ask of staff. You know, how have we looked at Title VI and how it's going to impact the low-income communities?
Hi, good morning, Brian with Sandag. So we did a preliminary analysis about 6 months ago looking at the survey data that we have from our major survey we did a few years ago to understand the characteristics of the riders. So we used that data and looked at the different fare types to see the percentages of minority and low-income riders. We presented that data to the Civil Rights Office of the FTA and asked them to double-check our numbers and verify that the changes that we had proposed weren't likely to show a inequitable impact to minorities or low-income riders. So their initial analysis was that no, that none of our fares were more proportionally used by minority or low-income riders to begin with, like Paul was kind of saying. There's no one group that's using one more than the other. So on the face of it, there wouldn't be a Title VI impact. Our consultant is currently doing the full analysis to dig deep into all the proposed changes that we currently have on the table. These were just, you know, changed a couple weeks ago at board's request. So he's currently doing that final analysis. He took off on us to Hawaii a week ago, so he wasn't able to finish that analysis. But I will have that analysis when I bring it to the Transportation Committee and the Board of Directors at Sandag in a few weeks.
In a few weeks, okay. Also, in terms of the public feedback, and I know the presentation on page 11 listed those sites that you attended to reach out to the public, but how were we able to update the public on next steps?
So as part of the board policy at Sandag, when we do these fare changes, you know, we did all the steps we had to up to this point by doing those public meetings. We went above and beyond by doing the outreaches at the transit stations. Once the fares are changed, then we have the responsibility to go back out to the public and do the take ones on the vehicles that show what the exact changes are and when those dates will occur. So we'll be going back out to the public. And also at the Sandag board meetings, The first and second reading at the board will be considered public hearings as well, so they'll be receiving the public input at those. And I'll be presenting a summary of all the comments received to date.
And how is that information given to the public, that there are still opportunities for them to go and to give their input at SANDAG meetings?
Right. So that was all currently on the take one that was on the vehicles over the last couple months. That information was all there of when the meetings were planned for. We did have to move the meeting dates a little bit from our original proposed timeline to do some extra work with you guys. But on our websites, all three websites, on our social media sites, those meeting dates are all posted and the updates are constantly provided.
So that's on our website. Is it also on the SANDAG website?
Definitely.
Okay, because I had heard that the SANDAG website did not include a summary of the feedback, nor any of the dates of actually this meeting as well.
Right, so we were waiting for the results of today to finalize those dates, because we're still kind of unsure as to how we were going to be able to move forward. But once we're done here, we'll be able to update all that.
Okay, and then I do want to thank the public for coming and speaking on this item, because it is very important to all of us. But there was a question regarding SANDAG's plan to potentially reduce fares. How are we working with that?
So I did hear that from a couple other speakers, and you know, our work with the regional plan talks about lowering fares possibly to entice more riders under the system. So as part of the board's looking at the regional plan scenarios and possible future funding, that's one of the things that they look at. So as the board moves through all that, that'll be looked at more closely.
Okay, but this was something part of a network concept for the regional plan that was in place already. So I just want to make sure that we're working, you know, together and reaching those objectives.
Right, definitely.
And then just the last question on the proposed fare changes, and I know we're working towards a possible measure. And how are we working? Have we looked into how that's going to impact that measure?
It's going to be something that we poll to see if that's what the public would be interested in seeing.
Okay, so we haven't done any work on that right now. Or we didn't take that any of that in account as we made these decisions?
No, we haven't gone out with the polls yet.
Okay, and so I just, you know, last comment. You know, again, this is a difficult decision, I think, for all of us, especially with those folks that are being most impacted by these changes. But I think, as was said today, everyone's being impacted to some degree. And I think when you have the alternative of having to reduce routes, I don't think that's the best scenario either. So I'm not sure that we have any new information that would delay this process. But is there a problem with a deadline if this process would be delayed?
Well, North County Transit District is in a much more dire financial straits than we are, and they would want to move forward. The goal for us was not to try to do it twice, having North County change their fares, then add a whole nother complexity, and then go in and change our fares. So that's why the Regional Comprehensive Fare Ordinance always wants to try to work as a unified regional document, rather than, you know, North County do theirs and then we come in behind and do ours.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't see anybody else in the lights. Mr. Hall.
Okay, I'd just like to see if we could just put this off for a while and have staff look into more of a tiered event versus making a decision today. That would be my suggestion.
Okay, thank you for that suggestion. So I don't know if that was a motion to hold off, or I'm going to ask for a motion.
Yes, that's a motion.
Okay. Do I have a second? Mr. Diaz? Okay. We have a motion to not take action today and direct staff to do something else. We'll figure out what that something else is. I am going to call for the vote. Yes, Mr. Sankey.
A question about process. Since this has already been approved by our friends up north, if we make some changes to this particular at a subsequent meeting or whatever, would it have to go back to the folks up north to have approved again since we would be making changes?
Well, that would be a decision by SANDAG. They're the holders of the regional comprehensive ordinance. They could go forward without our doing anything today. But if they do, that means that they're going to have quite a bit of confusion as to what it is that this agency wants to do.
I can tell you that, you know, when we start on this 2.5 years ago, right? I mean, we probably didn't come to you last year because of the coordination with North Carolina, okay? This has been a long process with them. I mean, North County has really surprised me in coming into sync with our fairs, which is something we always wanted to have happen, and because it's a longer stretch for them. They're across the board lower, but their financial situation is such that they need the revenue increase. Even SB 1 did not do enough for them. They have significant capital needs. So, yeah, I mean, we'll have to go back. I've talked to Matt all the time. It's just another reason on why we're in a very good place on this for a whole variety of reasons to go forward with it.
Okay, thank you. So we do have a motion to not take today's recommendation and direct staff to bring alternative approaches. I will not be supporting the motion. I do think that staff did its due diligence in this process. I'll call the vote. I know that Mayor Salas has some comments, so I'll call on her before the vote. But okay.
I didn't have the comments. It was Chris.
Chris,
but
sorry. I thought yes. It was you.
However, since you called on me, I'll give you my opinion. So, as Paul mentioned, we have had multiple opportunities over the course of a year now to weigh in onto this the recommendation that we're going to be voting on, and any way you slice it, it's going to be hard for each and every group that uses transit, whether it be the working people that really are the bulk of the ridership, or the seniors, and that we have to come. Our job is to make really hard decisions. That's what we're elected to do. And I'm really fully confident that as distasteful it is for us to have to raise rates, it's an absolute necessity. So if you're looking at the options that we have at hand, is that do nothing and have to come back and cut routes. And believe me, whenever we've had to do modifications to our routes, we have even more people coming out to tell us what a terrible economic impact it is and inconvenience to them it is for MTS not to be able to provide that service. So that's really the choice that we're facing today. And so for that reason, I will not be supporting the motion that's on the floor either.
Thank you, Ms. Ellis. Councilmember Kate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for, I'm not a regular here, so we haven't raised the rates here in 10 years. So what is the intent moving forward to evaluate these? Are we going to evaluate rates on an annual basis? Is that the goal in mind, or wait another 10 years? What's the process moving forward?
So our next go at this will be when we implement the new fare collection system, because we'll be able to take advantage of the new functionalities. That's when we'll put fare capping and some of these other things that we spoke about in the last agenda item into play. So this is a short-term attempt to right-size the fares so that we can maintain our budget.
When you do that, are all options on the table, even potentially lowering fares as well too, without having to go back and do the public outreach again? This body can do that?
If it's, this body can't make any changes to fares. They can only recommend.
Recommend to SANDAG, but they can, based on the fare capping, and once the new system comes in line, if we do want to say,
yes, and I think that was brought up with the question about SANDAG's regional plan, is that in the event that SANDAG wanted to subsidize a fare decrease, then that could be on the table.
I understand the bind that this body is in as well too. I have two senior centers in my district that are bustling at the seams. a lot of seniors attend those programs, use transit to get there. I just see the fact that for whatever reason, again, no judgment, that this body hasn't looked at rates in 10 years is a very, very long time. And a lot's changed in 10 years. And so whatever this body can do moving forward to evaluate this more regularly, so we don't have to be in positions to just have dramatic increases on a 10 after 10 years. I don't know how you right-size that, but yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cade. And just also just to add a little bit, and I'll close the discussion. We part of the measure that we're exploring, fare decreases are part of that discussion. And I know that Sandeg is also having that. So with that, I'm going to call the motion is to not adopt the recommendation and direct staff to do additional work. So all those in favor, please raise your hands. Opposed? Okay, so let's call it again. All those in favor to not adopt today's recommendation. Three. All those opposed? Got it? Okay. I'll make the motion to adopt the recommendation and work with Sandeg on moving forward. Do I have a second? Thank you, Ms. Salas. All those in favor, please raise your hands. Opposed? Okay. Motion moves forward. Thank you all for this difficult discussion. I get it. And we're going to work hard in making sure that we bring more resources to reduce fares in the future. I'm the chair of the board, and I'm also the council president for the council in the city of San Diego. So we're going to move forward to item 33. I am going to waive the staff report unless board wants a full presentation. Okay, yes, 33 is the UC San Diego for adding services.
Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Hall.
Second
by Vice Chair Mona Rios. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Moves unanimously. This is an exciting request, and I think it's going to do wonders for UCSD. So thank you for the great presentation. We are almost to the end, folks. Moving forward to the reports, Operation Budget Status Report. Okay, so I'm hearing that there's not much changes. Would love to hear you, Mike, but we're going to waive your presentation unless I hear otherwise. Thank you, Mike, for the great work. All right, we ad hoc the ballot measure. The chair for that ad hoc, it was Mr. Alvarez. So we're going to be, once the committee meets to do new assignments, we're going to have a report. But I can say that the committee is working diligently and making sure that we bring forward a proposal to the board. So soon we'll be bringing a full update on what's been happening with the measure discussion. I do not have a report. The executive, Paul, do you have a report, Chief Executive Officer?
No, other than to wish everybody happy holidays.
Oh, yes.
And we'll see you in 2019.
Thank you. Any comments or reports from board members?
Yes. I just wanted to draw the attention to the board that there's going to be a conference in Palo Alto in January that I'm going to attend. And it's the impact of automotive vehicles on public transport. I think it's very germane to the things that we do here. And so I'll be going to represent the city of Chula Vista because of the work that we're doing with autonomous vehicles.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
So I'll report back to you.
Ms. Ellis, if my calendar allows it, I will join you. Mr. Mullen.
Yes, with respect to the new faces here, and I have reason to believe there'll be a new face in this chair at the next meeting, wondering if it would be worthwhile to entertain the idea of a new board member orientation, just to cover the board and the organization and CIP and so on.
Yes, each board member will be getting a full briefing, and we'll make sure that they're ready to engage in the conversation. So thank you. Thank you for that reminder. I do have one last request to you from the public to speak to us. Michelle Crew.
I will be very brief. I know I lost my turn when I went to the restroom. The bottom line for me is, and it came up in three or four different items today, is that I would love to see some more creative ideas about communication. My friends in here that were speaking against 32, item 30, the fare increase, many of them just had wrong information. I heard things like, oh, the fares are going to double, et cetera, et cetera. So I just would ask that, for example, on the trifold that's on the buses that I cannot read because of my vision, but it may be putting the proposed amounts down and very clearly saying that these are the proposed amounts might have helped. Also putting it on the website that these are the proposed initiations, just so that they would have had an idea that it was never $36 for the seniors. It was always 26 or 27, whatever the number was, and then went down to 23 because they didn't have that concept. Also, again, coming up about how the communication happens, I did not know, and obviously I'm involved, that those public meetings were going on. Maybe there's a way on the buses that the loudspeaker that does announce the different stops could also have different announcements added, because I can't do the reading. So the trifle doesn't help me. It still is important. But perhaps there could be some kind of announcements. Perhaps the bus drivers, but that's probably too much to ask, might be able to say there's public meetings coming up, this is special, or something like that. But I know that there are announcements on both the trolley and on the buses. Perhaps we could find some of the creative ways to reach the blind community. Thank you very much, and thank you for your work.
Thank you, Ms. Crew. Those are great suggestions and a good reminder. We're always open and improving how we're engaging the public and the customers that we serve. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. Our next meeting is scheduled for January 17, 2019, and that brings us to adjournment. Thank you so much, and happy holidays.